Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello, welcome Rush Nation to the 5 Yard Rush Daily Fantasy Sports Show. I'm Mark and I'm joined today by Rich of 5 Yard Dynasty fame. The more observant of you will have noticed that Nick is not here. If you haven't read his Twitter feed, he's just had a baby and he's decided that spending time with her was more important than spending time with me. There you go, and I'm in place. Thankfully, Rich has kindly stepped in. And thanks for taking a very small break and joining me after just finishing the Dynasty show, 10 minutes ago?
Yeah, about that. No, thank you very much for having me. Very excited to be on. It's been a busy evening for me. Luckily, the kids were very good and both went to sleep nice and quickly, so I could get onto double podcast duty.
Yeah, Nick's still living the dream of easy babies and all that. So, so he's very excited still. We'll ask him each week as he appears on the show.
Yeah, give him a couple of weeks to settle in. Bragging about 5 hours sleep last night.
So, yeah, exactly.
I'll check in a couple of weeks.
I haven't had that in 4 years, so I don't know how he's getting it. But there you go. So, it's great to have you on, especially as you're doing so well in this tournament. You know, you're 36th at the moment, which actually is like the seventh highest lineup because there's two massive trains ahead of you. So it's gone really well for you so far.
Yeah, I guess the phrase it's better to be lucky than good. I basically feel like I lucked out a little bit. I plugged in used your calculator, plugged in my pre-season projections, and spat out a team that seems to be doing really well. So. Thoroughly enjoying the concept. It's obviously something very new to me, but really enjoying it so far.
When I put my projections into there, it spat out Baxton Berrios. So I decided I'm impressed that it worked with your projections.
I'm glad that it didn't spit anything out like that. But yeah, it seems to fit an absolutely storming lineup. So
yeah, we actually got a question about that. I think week three. And stuff, because I think he did quite well at the beginning of the season or something. We had two good weeks or something.
Yeah, Jameson Crowder was out injured, wasn't he?
And yeah,
the Jets need a slot receiver, so yeah, he got a ridiculous number of targets, didn't he, for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, it was after Corey Davis like got us all excited in week one or whatever it was. I'm talking like it's all so long ago. Feel like it.
We're over a quarter of the way through. The season disappears incredibly quickly, isn't it?
And it's gonna get really hard this week because there's so many injuries last week, and with you having to lock your fan teams on a Thursday, I think there's gonna be quite a bit of guessing going on.
Yeah, it killed me in my other lineup. I can't remember if it's last week or the week before where I had Tyson Williams and Elijah Mitchell. And on Thursday, they both looked like they were going to play. And I was like, all right, I'm fine. They're both in. And then obviously Tyson Williams was a healthy scratch and Elijah Mitchell didn't play. And I was like, okay, that's great. I got a zero from two spots, which was pretty brutal.
Oh, so I was just looking at your second team. It's like 467th. So I feel a little bit better now.
Yeah, I was going to say, less said about that one's probably the better.
Yeah, okay. Actually, that's still beating the pod team, which I'm going to be talking about later today. So. And I've used my wild card last week. Before we start looking at the teams, just wanted to ask you, because obviously you come from a more traditional fantasy football background. You're known as the king of dynasty now. But so for you, do you think you're going to have an advantage for the fact you're used to planning for a season? Or do you think it made no difference with this particular contest?
I love the idea that you think that I plan for the season. I take that as a massive compliment that you think I do that much planning. From my kind of dynasty head, I guess I'm looking at overall kind of value and player value and trying to look season long kind of and beyond, really, rather than perhaps going week to week and kind of small value to small value. So I guess that probably helps a little bit in terms of not massively overreacting both positively and negative to kind of 1 week's collection of data. But yeah, I think that it's difficult for me. The thing that I'm probably going to struggle with is once we're getting into these bye weeks, because I'm kind of notoriously insane that bye weeks are overrated, and I never plan for bye weeks in redraft or dynasty because so much can change and that kind of thing. And here we are approaching bye weeks and on fan team, and I'm a little bit nervous that I'm going to regret and end up sort of costing myself some points because I've not planned accordingly for those bye weeks.
It didn't start very well today, did it? In the fact that you said at the beginning of the day you weren't going to do any transfers for this week, but you've got two guys playing. Players on a bye, so but we will come to them.
I feel like you've thrown me under the bus there. Yeah. I was feeling very smug, thinking, "Oh, I really like my team. I think I'm just going to stay with it," and then realise, "Yeah, I've got two guys on bye, so I should probably think about making some transfers."
By the way, before we go any further, we've already had a question in, which I think you're going to enjoy. Who do you think is the best football player in the world? Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, Neymar, Mbappe. Lewandowski or Zlatan. So there you go.
As a guy that doesn't watch much football in town at the moment, I'm not sure. I'll answer it with my stock response of the best player I've ever seen was original Ronaldo, and I still maintain that. I think that him at his peak was better than any of the others. So
there you go. Some top fan team and NFL season long analysis there. Oh, I didn't enjoy that. So before we go any further, though, before we look at our teams from last week and see how they did, it's my turn this week to do the ad. So we're sponsored by Manscaped. If having a smooth bag is your bag, join the over 2 million guys who entrust their below-the-waist grooming to manscaped.com. The world leaders recently released the Lawnmower 4.0, which is the pinnacle of down-there trimmers. Head over to manscaped.com and use our promo code of 5YARD at the checkout. That's the number 5 and the word yard, 5YARD. You'll receive 20% off and free worldwide shipping.
That was the smoothest Manscaped ad read I've heard, Mark.
Nick's back to doing it next week. So I tell you what, as you are a guest, I tell you what, we'll get your team up there first for last week. This is your 36th place team. How you did? Hopefully you can see that on the screen.
Yeah.
So who have we got here? Let's start. We've got Mahomes, which is pretty standard, although he's not exactly looking great at the moment, I wouldn't say.
No, although, yeah, I really think that talent's going to shine through. I think as a team, you know, 2-3, who'd have thought it? But I really think that we're going to see, you know, Mahomes put the Chiefs on his back and basically go on a bit of a tear. I think for me, I'm if I can get any discount in Dynasty, I'm trying to buy him, and I'm adding him in any lineup I can, because I really believe that from here on out we could see some sort of record breaking Mahomes. I really think that he's going to show that he's the best player in the NFL.
Well, they got a big 6-pointer against Washington next week, carrying our footballing theme. Both 2-3. A lot of points in that, I think.
I think it's going to be a get right game, isn't it? You know, it's
for one of them.
Shocked, yeah. If it's going to be a high scoring affair for certainly one team.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you want to get your passing game going and stuff, they might not even need Hill and Kelsey. They were both. I think I'm expecting both of them to actually play this weekend.
Yeah,
from what I'm hearing so far.
Yeah, so from what I've seen, it's Tyreek Hill was a bit of a scare, but he's absolutely fine. And I think Kelsey, you know, he'll play through whatever he's got. To be honest, he's pretty much an Iron Man at this point, isn't he?
Yeah. So what I find interesting about your team is you don't actually have Derrick Henry. So you've got Patterson and Eckler. Now, obviously, how long have you had Patterson in for?
So I think I've had him 2 weeks. So he was. Okay. I had Christian McCaffrey, as, let's be honest, pretty much everyone did. And then when the injury happened, I was contemplating going to Henry. And I think it was talking in the WhatsApp chat with yourself, and you sort of saying that, you know, listening to the pod as well, saying Henry is the obvious move. And I was thinking, well, actually, where else do I want to kind of look? And I looked at it, and being a Jets fan, I was actually fairly confident that, you know, the Jets D-line is the strength of the team. And I was thinking, actually, Derrick Henry might not have a storming game. And I looked at Austin Eckler and thought he had a fantastic stretch. I think he was, you know, he is criminally undervalued always, basically. So I thought that was a good kind of pivot away from that traditional kind of Derrick Henry spot. So that was why I went with Eckler and called Darrell Patterson. So I think I've had him 2 weeks. And it was basically coincided with me basically announcing on the Dynasty pod that I was all in on Cordarrelle Patterson. And I think that, you know, the way he was being used in Atlanta, the way he was being moved all over the field, you know, we saw him running traditional receiver routes. We saw him being given, you know, those one-on-one back shoulder fades in the red zone, plus also getting, you know, eight to 12 carries a game. I just think that the value of him at, I think he's, what is he, 10 million, something like that? It's just too good to pass up.
For another week, he's at 10. I suspect he's going to go up quite a bit after that. But yeah. I don't know if there's a limit on how much his price can be increased.
You'd imagine so, because surely it's going to, you know, mess up roster values if you could just load up on all the guys that are criminally undervalued at the moment, whether you go Heineke and Patterson and Elijah Mitchell and the likes of that, and then just see a huge boom in value, and then suddenly you can switch them out for the more traditional studs. It could skew things quite significantly.
But it could be something to take advantage of. It's also something to bear in mind that because Patterson is on a bye this week, if you want to get him into your team for week 7, then I would do it almost as soon as you can. Now, I don't know whether the prices will have changed with the sort of football, the EPL stuff on Fantain. There's this little window where you can start, you can do what you're talking about, where you can take advantage of those rises, as in you can get somebody in, then their price rises. But I don't know how it's going to work with this NFL one. So potentially on Monday or Tuesday, you could bring in Patterson straight away and he'd still be 10 million for you. So it potentially, I don't know.
I guess that's the because I was contemplating, I'll be honest, I was contemplating with the price rise looming, I was contemplating maybe just taking a zero in my kind of running back spot this week just to lock in that value, because we'll come on to it in a bit, I'm sure. But there is sort of one obvious replacement for Patterson, but I don't feel so great about him kind of rest of season, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's... Yeah, and it's true of all of the value guys, like Dalton Schultz as well, who's another obvious one and stuff. So, we'll see. We'll talk about those a little bit later. So your wide receivers are pretty much... Cup's obviously the top at the moment, and where's Samuel on the list?
I think he's
fifth. He's fifth, yeah.
And
also you've got Sanders, who's been fantastic the last couple of weeks.
So I think Sanders was my, I guess, sort of biggest success from my kind of projections early season. And was that he was a guy that I really thought was going to settle in as the wide receiver two in that offense, that I thought was going to be really pass heavy. And I was very excited about him at the value he was. Certainly after the first 2 weeks, I was probably not feeling quite so smug. He's definitely paid me back the last couple of weeks, hasn't he? He's been fantastic.
Yeah. And you kept him in during that time.
I was certainly scratching my head and contemplating it. But I just thought that I believe that the underlying stats were there. You know, he was running a higher number of routes. He was getting a decent target share. It was just that he wasn't catching a lot of balls and the Bills weren't kind of fully functioning offense. But I guess my loyalty has slightly paid off there.
I think that's also a thing about being a redraft or a dynasty player. As a DFS player, I would really struggle, and I have struggled in this competition so far, somebody to have two sort of down weeks for me to leave them in. This is something I'm really struggling with, so which is why my team's changed so much already. And I think Nick's the same.
I guess for me, that's where, you know, the kind of the dynasty I've kind of picked my guys and I sort of stick with them. And I guess I put a lot of work into my preseason projections. So I was trying to, I guess, stick my faith in those and sort of as long as I could, really.
Well, I think it works out. There was a tweet that went out, I think, last week. I think it was from Fantain Focus saying that, and it was just pointing out that you could have just picked these 9 players at the beginning of the season and you'd be 100 points in the lead. That's with no transfers. Now, of course, one of the players was Patterson, but nobody was ever picking Patterson week one, I don't think.
No.
I don't think anybody was. So it was, you know, I don't think it's realistic somebody would do that. But yeah, it's amazing. It's just basically said, if you picked the right players, didn't do a transfer, you'd have a 100-point lead right now.
Yeah. So, hindsight's 2020, isn't it?
We
could sit there and do that every week. I think I see people tweet out every week, oh, this lineup scored 50 points this week and it's just full of studs. And then this lineup of complete unheard of is 200 plus. And it's, that's the joys and fun of fantasy football, isn't it?
Talking of studs, whilst talking about Sanders, Stefan Diggs has been a bit underwhelming so far. Any ideas why?
Cure
Stefan Diggs, just cure him, please.
I really think all the underlying stats are there. I wouldn't be shocked if we see him have an incredible second half of the season. You know, he's 26.9% target share so far, ADOT of 13.3. You know, he's getting basically exactly the same number of looks and exactly the same type of looks as he did last year. He's just not producing. You know, we've seen the likes of Emmanuel Sanders and Dawson Knox catching the touchdowns, catching those deep balls. And I really think that, stick with the faith. I do think Diggs will come true. But I appreciate it's hard to buy into Diggs at the moment with a consistent kind of underperformance so far.
I think the other, we've been talking about price rises. Potentially, Diggs might have a price drop coming up because he's on the second page of the result of the sort of, you know, in scores and stuff. And if he does get a price drop, then, you know, he could be a really good option after the bye.
Yeah, absolutely. If he does drop, he becomes certainly more affordable. I think for me, his price at the beginning of the season was just too rich for my blood, basically.
Yeah.
If he is going to see a drop in price, I'd certainly be interested.
He's still 13% owned, which I find quite surprising.
I wonder how many of those are, should we say, inactive owners? Because
from the beginning of the season. Yeah.
I can't believe people have stuck with him this long.
I find that's quite a surprise. And then the rest of your team, in terms of Kelce, Lamb, Samuel's been a bit of a revelation. Though we had a question week two or three about who's going to disappoint the most going forwards, and I said Deebo Samuel, and I've definitely got that wrong because he's been fairly consistent no matter who's throwing him the ball, which is like,
it's a hard. You know, I was a guy that was loving Brandon Ayuk coming into the season, so yeah, I was a little bit slower to buy in on Deebo. I think I had him. I can't remember if it was last week or the week before. But with the level of production, it was hard not to buy in. CeeDee Lamb, I think, been a little bit disappointed with him, if I'm being honest. He's another one that's, I guess you could throw in that sort of similar range as Diggs. You know, we're at 23.3% target share. He's the, I think, wide receiver 23 on the season. Certainly not repaying the kind of cost that you spent to acquire him. But I do think that I think he's probably a top five talent in terms of wide receiver in the league. And I do really think that he's another potential winner as we go down the stretch, you know, only at 12% owned. I'm hoping that he's going to kind of repay my faith as we go on.
Talking of him, whilst I've got you to pick your brain, talking about disappointing wide receivers with talent, Calvin Ridley he's only 4% owned. He's 18 million. So I suspect he's going to have a price drop as he's like on the third page. So I don't know what that would be in terms of score, fan team scoring. But yeah, there's a lot of players above him. Is he going to get right?
I mean, yeah, I'll stick my Nostradamus hat on and look into the future. But
no, you've got the projections. Tell us.
Yeah, I think the stats are there. You know, he's seen a decent target share. I think that Atlanta offense has been far less impressive than everybody hoped at the beginning of the year. I do think he's struggled Not necessarily. I think this thing about being double covered is massively overhyped. And he's certainly not seeing double coverage anywhere near as much as people have you believe. But I do think that he's perhaps been more focused of opposing teams' defenses. I do think hopefully if we're going to see the emergence of Kyle Pitts after Sunday, if we're going to see Cordarrelle Patterson, you know, moved all over the field as he was at the weekend and has been the last few weeks, I'm very hopeful that that will open up things for Calvin Ridley. I still think he's, you know, a top three route runner in terms of the league, and I still think the talent's there. So, yeah, he's probably one to throw in with Diggs. If the price is going to drop, I might be eyeing up that as a punt.
Also, there might be a good way if you need to catch up a bit, because Ridley's, I say, 4% at the moment. Diggs is 13%, which I'm surprised about. So, yeah, they could be a good way to, like you say, after the first price changes, to maybe catch up with some people.
Yeah,
I'm definitely interested now. I think that'd be quite interesting. So that last week you scored 162 points with that team. It was a very high scoring week generally, though, wasn't it, last week?
Absolutely bonkers. I don't remember a fantasy week like it, to be honest.
And you, because you scored in the Scott Fishbowl, you scored 260 odd points or something.
Yeah. So I had an absolutely blinding week in Scott Fishbowl. It was, yeah, more luck than judgment there. I scored higher than any team has so far this year, in a week. But yeah, it was only the 12th highest score in Scott Fishbowl this week. So just shows you how kind of crazy it was.
Yeah. And, to show you how things are, in my Scott Fishbowl satellite, bear in mind, you know, the average score was like 200 something. I scored 127, which like completely destroyed me, because actually I was doing pretty well in my little conference. I was sort of doing pretty well, top 15 or something. I'd had some couple of good weeks, but I think if you'd done well like I had in like week four or something, you were naturally going to do bad in week five just because of how it worked out.
It felt like that, didn't it?
Yeah. Everyone
last week had a bad week, this week as such.
Let's take that off. I'll just quickly show you mine. If talking about bad weeks, let's look at my team from last week, which was of course my wildcarded team. So I was quite happy with Josh Allen and Derek Henry, as most people were. Kenneth Gainwell is something I think interesting to talk about. The reason I picked Gainwell was to not pick Cordarrelle Patterson. And he was like easily the next, to me, he was the best option around that same value. He's actually a little bit cheaper. Now, I've seen and heard you talking about him recently, and I think you're a bit of a fan of his as well. I just wonder if I've picked him a little bit too early, possibly.
I love Kenny Gainwell. I think he's a fantastic talent. I was super high on him before the draft. Once he fell to the fifth round, I was a little bit kind of cooler on him, shall we say. But yeah, it was hard not to love the usage early in the season, wasn't it?
For that price as well, it's like 8.5 or something like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And then this week happened and it completely flipped on its head. You know, this is a guy that was seeing kind of 40, 50% opportunity share and snap share. And I think he was, see, week five, he was 23.9% snap share and a 23.8% opportunity share. So, you know, it basically just vanished, didn't it? And
yeah,
who could have guessed it? He seemed to be getting all the targets. You know, Miles Sanders was getting no work in the passing game. And then all of a sudden they were like, okay, maybe let's just go back to Miles Sanders for no apparent reason. So yeah, it was a bit brutal to just manage like that.
He was like the anti Miles Gaskin, wasn't he? He was like, he's the guy I should have gone for. So the only reason anybody who was watching last week's show will know, he's in my team just to be a differential from Patterson. But I'm not that bothered by the decision making on there, because I wanted something to catch up, and I think Patterson was so owned, and especially towards the top, that I think it was a good way to try and catch up. But obviously, it hasn't worked out yet. I'm probably going to keep faith with him, though, for a little bit. I can't see how else I can. I've got two players which sort of save me money, him and Schultz, and I can't really see anybody else at the moment to do that for me.
And I think it should be an interesting week as well, because obviously the Eagles have got the Bucks on Thursday night. So, you know, you'd like to think, I imagine that's probably going to be a high-scoring affair. If Gainwell's going to get some of that passing usage again, it could be a decent game script for him.
Yeah, because they're not going to be running against them, are they? So
there's no point even trying to run against Bucks front seven. No.
It's like, and the fact that Brady just passes all the time, it might be like the quickest game, you know, the most plays or something we've had for like a long time. So he came in. He hasn't worked out yet, but it doesn't mean he's not going to. I'm going to probably keep faith with him. In terms of my receivers, I had brought in DJ Moore, Hill and McLaurin. And I did say that maybe this is points chasing a little bit, bringing them in last week. But I'm definitely not going to transfer any of them out. McLaurin's got is coming up against Kansas City in a game which I expect to be very high scoring, as we've already discussed a little bit. And I think Heinicke had one of his sort of awkward game. I can describe it awkward games. He seemed to always be either looking like he was being pushed around or injured or something. He always looks injured anyway, but he was just having one of those types of games that he has sometimes. And I think, but McLaurin is kind of really the only, he's kind of his main go-to guy. But I did notice, and this is somebody we'll talk about a little bit, maybe a little bit later in more detail. Ricky Seals-Jones was getting a lot of targets in the end zone, it seems to me. And he's only 6.5 million on the fan team. And so he might be a good choice for a few weeks if you're looking for somebody cheaper in the tight end spot. Because the other thing about tight end spot this year so far is Kelsey hasn't run away with it. So usually would pay up because he's run away with it, but he hasn't run away with it this year. Yeah. Now, obviously, he's just coming against Washington, so he'll probably get 40 points. So quite happy sticking with McLaurin. Tyreek Hill, we've seen this already this season. He's produced 14 points this week, and then he'll probably produce 50 points next week. And then he'll be down to 8 or 9 for a couple of weeks, and then up to 60 points. That's just the way he is.
Isn't it?
You know, yeah.
He can catch an 80-yard touchdown at any point, and I think that you've just got to, you know, almost embrace the variance and just trust that by the season's end, it'll look good.
Indeed. DJ Moore, I picked him thinking that McCaffrey might be out for another week, because I think when McCaffrey comes back, I haven't actually got any stats on this to show this, but I just had the feeling that Moore was getting more usage whilst McCaffrey was out. We seem to be more the focal of the focus of the offense, but I don't have any stats on that. It's just a feeling.
I think he was I've not got the exact stats, but I think he's definitely getting more varied usage. So he's obviously he lined up in the backfield a couple of times. He's taken a couple of handoffs in the last couple of weeks, and I think his ADOT has dropped. Which, whilst you see the increase in targets, obviously once that ADOT starts dropping, you sort of slightly less valuable targets, isn't it? So I do think that you sort of swings and roundabouts of slightly more usage, but slightly less valuable touches, and an offense without McCaffrey isn't going to get as many sort of red zone looks and that kind of thing as well.
No, but I mean, he is a talented player, and on his, when he has a game, you know, and his yards after the catch and stuff.
Absolutely.
He's incredible. The reason, the pricing, the way the pricing is in fantasy at the moment and stuff, is there's so many good receivers that are around the same price as DJ Moore. You know, like Mike Williams and Debo, who we'll talk about, Marquise Brown, Chase, who seems to be, you know, sort of hitting in his straps a bit. There's so many good options around there for that price. But one player we did want to talk to you about, talking about players who might not be, Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, but mainly Tyler Lockett because he's been pretty good so far. How do you think he's going to do without Russell Wilson for a few weeks?
I'm concerned. I'm very concerned, if I'm being honest, as a guy that's got a few Lockett shares. I think that the target share is probably going to be there. But look, I'm a Jets fan. I've seen plenty enough of Geno Smith. When he's good, it looks fantastic. But when he's bad, it is really bad. And I do think that yeah, both Lockett and Metcalf are probably going to see a down tick in terms of quality of targets, volume of targets, but also, you know, that offense is going to see a down tick. We're going to see less red zone usage. We're going to see less, you know, high scoring opportunities, because I think that basically that offense isn't going to be as good without Russell Wilson, is it?
Yeah. Do you think Chris Carson gets more work? Or
I don't know.
Whoever's fit in the backfield.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this on the Dynasty Pod just now. I'm really concerned about Chris Carson's neck. I read one article that suggested it was basically he's got like the same thing as scoliosis, but in his neck, which I'm not a doctor, but that sounds pretty serious to me. So I don't know if Chris Carson is going to be back. I don't know if Chris Carson's going to be firing. So, you know, if that is the case, maybe Alex Collins could be a sneak value play again if Carson's going to be out. But I think it's going to be one of these that this is the challenge of fan team where you can't, you know, you're setting your lineup on a Thursday.
Yeah,
you're not going to know until Sunday whether Carson's playing or whether it's going to be Alex Collins again.
No, Alex Collins is $7 million in there, so he's definitely a good enabler at that sort of price. But like you say, until they rule him out for definite earlier in the week, you're not going to know.
It's a bit, couldn't it?
Yeah, and also it seems to me, again, no stats, just a feeling, that Chris Carson's been on a lot of injury reports, and a lot of the times you think it's like in the middle of the week he's not going to play, and then he comes back and he'll run for 60 yards or something like that. I think if you don't get him at the beginning of the year when he's fit, I think after that it becomes a bit of a harder play.
Yeah, definitely.
That's how it feels to me.
To be honest, it's just the guy I like to avoid because I just don't want that headache of trying to work out what's happening. I think that there's better players in similar value ranges that I feel more comfortable with, certainly.
I'm asking about Tyler Lockett because my highest ranked team in fan team has Tyler Lockett in it. And I've got to work out if I want to use a transfer this week or not on him. Just bear in mind, when you're using these transfers right now, you're in the middle of bye week season. So just plan for your buys and just try, you know, unless you need to do your to use your transfers, then just be careful. You're probably going to need the extra one at some point, you know, a 3-week transfer week. So, that was me. So it wasn't a very great score this week. And actually, I did really badly this week. I think I was about 900th. Yeah, 136 points. So my team's currently dropped down. See, when we started this about weeks one or two, it was like 100. It was in like 110th, and it's gone down to 499. So it's definitely my worst team so far. My worst team out of my four. So there you go. Just bad luck. That's what I chose to do this show about. You know,
it's the case, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, so transfers. I'm going to spoiler alert for me. I'm not going to do any transfers this week, as I'm pretty happy with the thinking behind my team. They just, none of them really did anything this week, but I think they've all got potential to have good, you know, good weeks and have ceiling weeks. But people more interested to see a 36th place team and what that's going to be doing. There we go. So here you've put in, you've done two transfers, have you?
Yeah, so just subbed out the two guys on bye, quite frankly, in terms of obviously Cordarrelle Patterson and Deebo Samuel. Subbing out Patterson, I quite liked the balance of my kind of roster lineup. So I tried to basically make sideways moves and stay in the same price bracket rather than kind of change the structure massively, if that made sense.
Yeah.
So for me, I subbed out Cordarrelle Patterson and added in Damien Williams. I think for me, he was the obvious option in that price bracket. I think, he's probably going to be reasonably highly owned because I think most people are going to probably make that exact same move. But I just thought that this is a guy that's going to get a 70 to 80% opportunity share. And at the value, it made sense. I am going to, after you said about earlier in the week, I'm going to go away and do some research and work out whether I potentially want to think about keeping Cordarrelle Patterson in there, because if it might be that if the, you know, if he's going to see like a 4 or 5 million price rise, I might keep him just to almost pocket that extra 4 or 5 million.
Yeah, I'll ask the fan team guys if they know what sort of ranges and what sort of whether it's percentage based changes or not. Because when they do their football ones every week, it's only very small, like 0.1 million out of, you know, Salah's like 12 million or whatever he is. So it's quite small. So I don't know how drastic it's actually going to be. Yeah, Williams does seem like the obvious sort of play. He's going to be a short-term play, though, isn't he? Because Montgomery's going to be back.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was basically viewing it as almost a one-week sub. excuse me. I was probably looking and thinking, if I subbed out Cordarrelle Patterson, I'd probably be looking to get him straight back in. So it was almost a like for like swap as such.
Because I suppose the difference between Patterson going forwards after this bye week is Patterson is like always going to be part of that offense going forwards as long as he's fit. They've definitely made a, you know, say we, me and Nick talked about this last week, the first team that have ever really known how to use him properly.
It's only taken 8 years, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's a late bloomer. And at his price, everybody else there is like a Kenny Gainwell where they're sort of part of something, as it were. And like Williams is going to be the main man for a few weeks, but then he won't be, I suspect.
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously somebody else will probably turn up. You know, like you say, could be Alex Collins, could be anybody in that price range. I had a look earlier today at players under that price range and running back position under 10 million, and it was pretty depressing stuff. Jeremy McNichols is in there, and Chuba Hubbard, who's an injury replacement. Funny enough, Tyson Williams is in there still at 6 million, and he came back last night, didn't he?
Yeah, I think that, to be honest, that backfield is just going to be one you want to avoid, because I think that there's going to be, you know, we've seen Latavius Murray get work. We've seen potentially Devonta Freeman get work. Lev Bell's floating around still. You've got Tyson Williams. And I think that it's going to be a bit of all of them. And I don't think there's going to be one back that's going to produce enough to warrant you kind of throwing them in your lineup, even at, you know, the bargain price that Tyson Williams is.
Yeah. And Elijah Mitchell's another one. It's interesting because I know you're keen on him.
Yeah,
he's only 8 million.
I think that this is his backfield. I think that he's, you know, if you can give me the RB1 in any Shanahan offense, I'm fully interested. If you can give it to me at 8 million, I think it's an absolute must buy. He's kind of my backup plan if I do decide to sub out Cordarrelle Patterson and go with Damien Williams and hope that Elijah Mitchell's price doesn't rise above 10 million. He'd definitely be the guy that I'm targeting, because I think that, you know, he's going to be boom. He's going to be bust weeks. I think I'm expecting Jimmy G to come back and start at quarterback over Trey Lance. I appreciate that's probably not the consensus opinion, but I do think that if Jimmy G is the quarterback, I think the running back of the offense is going to be very valuable. I do think if Trey Lance is going to be the quarterback, I think I probably don't want to touch the running back, because I think you're going to see a significant drop in terms of opportunities for the running back.
Was he on a pitch count or something last week, Elijah Mitchell?
No, the offense just wasn't very good, was it?
Okay.
Trey Lance had 16 rushing attempts, didn't he?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Massively ate into Elijah Mitchell's workload.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Trey Sermon's still floating around, obviously. You know, they traded up in the draft to go and get Trey Sermon. But I do really believe that Elijah Mitchell's going to be the kind of RB1 for that team moving forward.
If you want to, if you're looking for another £10 million fill in for the next few weeks, Devontae Booker is there at £10 million for the Giants. Because Saquon will be out for probably 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's
maybe
another good.
Yeah, it's again he'll be warm, which is a temporary thing. Because as soon as Barkley comes back, I had Saquon and Daniel Jones all over my DFS lineups this weekend. I was full. I was in completely on them. It just looked like a great matchup, you know, going the opposite side to the very popular Cowboys and everything, and then just didn't work out for, you know, just bad luck.
If you want a really speculative other option, the other option is potentially Marlon Mack, who obviously rumors released today that the Chiefs are apparently in potential talks and sort of eyeing up Marlon Mack in potential trade. CH has just gone on IR. I'm talking very, very speculative. I don't think Marlon Mack is going to be a Chief, and I don't think he's going to suddenly become hugely valuable. But if that did happen, at 10 million for 3-4 weeks, he could be very valuable.
Yeah, that was I just saw that news just before we came doing this, that he'd gone to IR. It's a short term IR though, isn't it? It's the 3-week one.
Yeah. So he's I think it's like an MCL sprain, so it'll probably be 3 to 4 weeks, something like that.
Fine. Okay. Cool. So then you went for Antonio Brown.
I find to what you were saying earlier about that, you know, 15 to 16 million range, is there's so many good options. It's really difficult trying to pick which one to go for, quite frankly. So I considered Mike Williams, which was kind of the obvious option, I guess. But I just thought that Antonio Brown, I want a piece of that Bucks offense, because I do think it's going to put up points every week. And I do think that it's not completely contrarian, but I think it's probably slightly more contrarian than going after a Mike Williams.
He's only 2% owned. Evans is 3% and Godwin is 5%. They seem criminally under-owned, those guys.
That's really shocking. Ownership. Yeah. I'm very surprised.
Yeah, considering Brady is the top quarterback. I'm pretty sure that's not going to last all season. I think Jackson's going to go past him. Yeah. Just on the ground.
I mean, Brady's, I don't know what his touchdown rate is at the moment, but it's pretty unsustainable. It's a guy that's had, you know, 7-8% touchdown rate for his career. And I think he's up north of 10% at the moment, which is pretty unheard of. I'm talking rubbish. He's at 6.7% touchdown rate, so he's actually pretty much bang on what you'd expect. So
he's sustainable then.
Yeah.
So those guys seem very under-owned to me.
I guess it's the variance, isn't it? Because it's, you know, like we talking earlier about Tyreek Hill. From a week-to-week basis, it can be painful. But when you look at it at the end of the season, he's had a good season. And it's the same with all three of those. It could be any one of them that has a massive boom week. It could be any one of them that puts up a dud. And who knows which one it's going to be each week, kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those where you need to have the discipline to put them in your lineup and just leave them. Because if you try and guess which one it is each week, you're going to go mad. Yeah. It's... There's no, you know, logic to it.
No, absolutely. It's a stick it and forget it and just pray kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And he does look really good. I mean, you know, Antonio Brown had all his issues and stuff, but since he's gone to Tampa Bay, he's been just fantastic. And
this is a guy that was the best receiver in the NFL for 5 years. You know, he's first ballot Hall of Famer. Yes, he's a complete lunatic and had all sorts of personal issues, but you stick him on a football field and you can't deny the talent. Yeah.
Well, he wasn't a lunatic before Vontaze Burfict took his head off. And I think that's basically probably part of it. You know, I would genuinely not be surprised if that came out years later to be one of the reasons he went off the rails.
Well, this is also a guy that was playing in a helmet that the NFL had banned and said wasn't safe. He refused to play in a helmet.
And then Burfict happened and stuff, which is that's terrible. Talking of receivers, here's a guy. Now, I thought this guy was going to be really cheap and I thought he was going to be great value. But it turns out he's not that cheap because he's actually in at 11 million. And that is Kadarius Toney.
Okay.
Now, he's had, I think I saw on the Twitter machine earlier that he's had the most yards after catch since week 4. Something like that. Just on the eye test, if you watch him, some of the plays, it looks like he's on fast forward and everybody's on normal speed. is just amazing.
His ability to stop is like nothing I've ever seen, which seems ridiculous when you're talking about a receiver running fast, but his ability to go from full speed to zero is really impressive. I've been properly impressed watching him. And yeah, you know, 22 targets in 2 week span is incredible. My real concern, and we've just had this conversation on the Dynasty pod, my real concern is what happens when Shepherd comes back? What happens when Golladay's fully fit? What happens when Slayton's fully fit? What happens when Evan Ingram's fully fit? What happens when Barkley's comes back? I think, you know, we've seen a 2 week stretch where they've basically not had any other options other than force feed Tony. So I'm a little bit concerned that to go out, you know, as you said, you're not getting him super cheap.
Nah.
So if he does it for two more weeks, then I'm probably all in. And I appreciate at that point I'm late on the bandwagon and I'm chasing points again. But I just want to see it before I jump in, because I am concerned that he's going to disappear when the other receivers come back. You know, when Sterling Shepherd's back, you're not going to see him running out of the slot anymore, because that is Sterling Shepherd's role. I just can't buy in yet, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, the logic, sort of common sense side of me says the Giants coaches will see what's going on here. They must see that he's the best receiver they've got, and therefore they've got to do what they can to get him the ball. But as we know, NFL teams don't always work like that. Coaches don't always see things the same because they have more information than us. You know, they know these players a lot better than we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of stuff we don't see behind the scenes and stuff that's going on and things like that. So, you know, it's definitely one to keep an eye on, though.
Definitely.
I'm not sure his price is going to increase massively, because I don't think he's had enough, unless he does something big this weekend against the Rams. I don't see his price is going to change massively. Just looking at those cheaper players under 12 million, which is obviously Assist Sanders and stuff. We've got Hunter Renfrow, who's next there. Tim Patrick, who I know we both like. I put him into my top team. He hasn't really produced yet. Chris Kirk, Rondell Moore. Again, Arizona Cardinals are a bit of a funny team at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, I love Rondell Moore, the player. But it's just tough because, you know, we talked about it earlier about that sort of ADOT and getting those higher value targets. And Rondell Moore's got the lowest ADOT of any wide receiver in the NFL that's had more than 10 targets. His ADOT is 2.9. He basically got the average depth of target of a running back. Like, they're force feeding him the ball, but it's in and around the line of scrimmage. It's not downfield. And I think that he's fantastic. He's an incredible weapon. But it's just because of where he's getting the ball, it's just not reliable. You're basically relying on him breaking tackles for a long touchdown. And he's never going to get the ball in and around the, you know, the goal line, is he, because of the size?
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing. Because this contest is still new, you know, it's first year we've had it and stuff. So nobody really knows what the best strategies are and stuff at the moment. Players like Patrick and Renfrow, at the prices they are and stuff, 10, 11 million, they're consistent, you know, but they haven't got as big a ceiling as a player like Moore or Kirk. And Zach Pascal's in there as well, who was obviously very, you know, he was touted a lot at the beginning of the season, as was Callaway, who's had a couple of good weeks. And it's interesting. I'm not really sure the best route to go at that stage. I guess it comes down to where you are in the table. If you want to catch up, you probably need to use the ceiling players. If you're doing pretty well, you're happy with the position, then players like Renfrow and Patrick, who sound really, seems like the dullest thing in the world to play either of those guys, but they're consistent.
Yeah. You
know? Renfrow's double figures every week.
You know? Maybe that's the, if you're looking to catch up, because I'm sure Renfrow's ownership is probably criminally low. Maybe that's the way to go to look at catching up, is you go someone that's completely contrarian, that's not going to be owned very highly.
This is going to make you laugh.
Just gives you points every week.
This is going to make you laugh. Renfrow is twice as owned as Antonio Brown.
Okay, right, well.
Yeah, which is just ridiculous, isn't it?
Ignore everything I've just said for the last 30 seconds.
But it's only 4% still.
Oh, okay.
It's only 4%. And, Renfro and Patrick are 4 and 5%. And, yeah, I don't know whether the strategy there would be to get a couple of players in like that and, go with ceiling players for the others.
Yeah, I guess the concern with Patrick as well is that Jerry Judy's, so what we know, we're a week away probably from Jerry Judy coming back. So, I still think Patrick's good enough to get, a 15% kind of target share in the offense. But is that enough to warrant the price you're kind of paying for him? I do wonder if now's the time to probably be moving away from a Tim Patrick.
Yeah, and just looking at other players, there's nobody else even remotely as consistent as Renfro. I mean, obviously Sanders has been fantastic the last 3 weeks. He's got a bigger window, but nobody else in that price range seems to be as consistent. I mean, my man KJ Osborne's dropped off the cliff, and $6.5 million. So yeah, I think Renfro's the play, actually, as I'm talking to you now.
Yeah.
I think getting someone like a Renfro in there is a great option.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, as you said, it's not sexy. It's not going to, be entertaining or particularly interesting, but you can almost pencil those points in every week, can't you, at the moment?
So just finally, we'll just spend a few minutes, if that's okay, just talking about tight ends, which is normally a position me and Nick say we're never going to talk about that much and we spend ages talking about. The top scorers and stuff, definitely not what you'd expect with Knox and Schultz in their third and fourth.
No, absolutely.
I think Knox has been interesting because he was obviously partly involved last year and stuff, but this year it seems to be him and Sanders are the two guys. It just seems to be the way it's worked out so far.
I'm kicking myself for not owning more Dawson Knox, because I talked him up at the beginning of the season as a potential option. I talked him up as, we talk about these breakout tight ends, yet he'd been kind of forgotten about as that third year tight end that had shown flashes. I just don't know if I can ever buy into consistent production from him, because I do think that best case scenario he's what, fourth target in that offense. I think that for me, if you've got him in your lineup, I'm probably sticking with him and riding almost a hot hand, but I'm certainly not chasing the points there, because I do think he's the kind of guy that could disappear for 2 weeks and you end up kicking yourself for trying to chase the points and just getting nothing.
Yeah, I think the thing you need to be careful about with tight end position generally is, because of the sort of lack of quality there, just having one or two good weeks puts you up near the top of the leaders. And David Njoku's on there now after what he did at the week. He's on the first page, I mean, Gronk was at the top and he's dropped down because he had two good weeks at the beginning, and obviously now he's injured and stuff. I wonder, Pitts has suddenly come up into the top seven after being disappointing all season and stuff. So I just if you're looking for a new tight end and stuff there and you're not going for the obvious names, then just check out the history and just to confirm, see if they're being used regularly, because there's a lot of inconsistency there.
I think when you're talking tight ends as well, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in Las Vegas with Darren Waller, because without wanting to get into what's happened there, it's obviously a bit chaotic, shall we say. But John Gruden was Darren Waller's biggest fan, wasn't he? He called him the most talented receiver in the NFL and all that kind of stuff. Does the fact that, Gruden's now out the door, are we going to see a more traditional offense where he's not getting, 25-30% target shares? Does it mean that, he's going to settle into just being one of the other guys as such?
Yeah, and I think just the way the season's going, you don't need to pay the price for Waller at the moment when you've got Schultz and Knox ahead of him. And he's the second most expensive receiver, I think. Yeah, same as George Kittle. I don't think you need to pay up for him, especially with the uncertainty. I think there's plenty of other options. I think whilst I'm still quite big on, whilst Jacoby Brissett's in. I'm still quite big in Gesicki.
Yeah.
As he's only 2% owned as well. Again, another consistency, a consistent guy whilst protecting. But then again, I think actually I might have read Tua might be back this week.
He could be back. I don't think it's been confirmed.
No.
Mm-hmm. I think one guy I'm really liking, I'm not loving, but I think is worth a look at is Hunter Henry as well. You know,
yeah.
We've seen that obviously they spent the big money on the two tight ends, but he's pretty much kind of settled above and kind of nestled himself in that top spot. He's seeing, you know, he's 28.6% target share last week. He's obviously producing, and he's running, you know, double, triple the amounts of routes of Johnny Smith on a consistent basis now. So I do think that, you know, he's not expensive, is he, at 13?
No.
Yeah, it could be worth a little punt in that.
Yeah. And he's down a 0% owned, which obviously means, I'm guessing, under 0.5. I don't believe he's 0% owned, but like, yes, there's a good differential. I personally, I've discussed this with Nick many times. I really have a trouble playing. I have a sort of a mental block playing receivers with rookie quarterbacks. Yeah, I really struggle with it. So, and New England haven't for a long time been a sort of great fantasy sort of place. So I really, he could look great on paper. I would still struggle with him personally.
Yeah, and I think I don't have the stats off the top of my head, but basically the rule is that rookie quarterbacks over the course of a season can produce one fantasy relevant player, and that's pretty much it. And that's pretty much the rule almost every year. So if you're looking at Mac Jones, who that one person is, could it be Hunter Henry having a, you know, a top 12 season, or is it going to be Jacoby Myers or one of those no-name receivers? I think that's all I'm sort of thinking, is that maybe Hunter Henry can solidify himself as the kind of top target in the offense. Mm.
I think, as we me and Nick say every week, tight end is such a awful position generally.
Pick a random name and pray for a touchdown, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Kelsey's still top. I mean, and we think he's had a bad season, but he's not so far ahead that he's worth the points, if you see what I mean. Sorry, worth the price and for his number of points. So,
but I think with this potential injury looming, and I really believe regression is coming, and the Chiefs are going to go on an absolute tear. Maybe if Kelsey's percentage ownership drops, I do wonder if it could be a really good catch up play to, you know, shoot up leaderboards, because I think he could have huge points, couldn't he?
Yeah, he always has. Yeah, I'm just surprised he's not further ahead, if you see what I mean. But he's 28% owned at the moment. But I don't think that's dropping this week. I really don't, because he's playing Washington.
Yeah.
But yeah, what it comes down to is whether you're happier having that cheaper player as a wide receiver or as your tight end, I think. Because you always need, there's not many constructions that you don't need like a £12 million receiver or something like that. Not many anyway.
Yeah, and I'm always a tight end early guy. You know, in redraft, I'm happy taking the tight end in the first or second round, and in dynasty I'm happy going and spending to get, you know, a big tight end, because I really believe that one of those top two options is what you want. So that was always going to be the way I built my fantasy lineup.
Well, my final thing is rookie Seals Jones for a few weeks, 6.5 million. Can't go wrong.
it's really worth the punt. So he played every offensive snap bar one last week. He ran routes on every single offensive pass play bar one. The only Washington player who ran more routes was Terry McLaurin.
Mm.
You know, for $6.5 million, he's going to be on the field. Like,
and he's playing it's Kansas City coming up as well. So.
And he's shown that, you know, he's a big body guy. He's a red zone threat, and Washington doesn't really have another big bodied red zone threat. So, as we said, pick a random name and hope for a touchdown. Well, if you're spending $6.5 million, why not?
He's also last week. I mean, Heineke was literally trying to force the ball to him. He was covered and stuff, and he's still trying to force it into him.
Because where else is he going to go?
Red zone, yeah. It's like so. Yeah, I think he's especially a good play if you need to catch up a little bit. Yeah. I really think so.
What's his ownership percentage? Is it
zero? It's a zero. So like, there you go. I mean, I don't think it'll be. I think it'll be 1 or 2% by the end of this week. I suspect that sort of savings. And because it's Kansas City as well, and you know, there's not really many worse defenses really than Washington and Kansas City at the moment. So those are fantasy points anyway.
Yeah, it's not what you wanted to come into season, the much vaunted Washington.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's a great offense to go up against.
It's such a funny game. It's going to be such a weird game, really.
Yeah.
To know, you know, both teams want to get back. You know, and it's also weird that we're talking about the Chiefs in these terms as well. You know, bottom of the West and all that.
Yeah, and you know, without wanting to labour the point anymore, this is why I really think that the cream is going to rise to the top, and I do think that they're going to turn things around quite quickly.
Yeah, I think there's a narrative out there that people are beating them the same way as Tampa Bay beat them in the Super Bowl and stuff, but it's quite a lazy narrative because if you look at the number of injuries they had and stuff in the offensive line and things like that and stuff, it wasn't, you know, there isn't just one way you can beat them and stuff. But Mahomes does need to adjust, definitely, to what's going on at the moment.
But if you look at the teams they've lost to, so this week they lost to the Bills. Like, let's not pretend that that's, you know, a terrible team.
No, even Washington lost to them.
Yeah. they lost to the Ravens, who, again, you know, we're talking about as an AFC contender. And they lost to the Chargers, who have just gone and beaten the Browns and, to me, look like the most impressive team I've seen, you know, outside of Tampa so far this season. And, you know, if you look back at the end of the season and say, OK, they lost to three very good teams, but I still think they're going to win, you know, 11, 12, 13 games this year. So I really turn around.
Yeah, I don't think the problem is I don't think there's any way you can use this to your advantage at the moment, because I think Hill's 24% owned and Kelsey's 28% owned and stuff. I think you're going to, like you say, there's going to be a number of people who just set their team and forgotten it almost. And so I don't know if you're going to necessarily catch up with people at the top using those guys. If you want to catch up now, if you're already at the top, if you're like you, in top 30, top 40 and stuff, you know, then using those guys kind of makes more sense. But yeah, if you're catching up, you kind of want them to fail a bit, I think. So yeah, anyway, well, that has gone really quickly. That's just gone. So that's, thank you for completing your marathon on YouTube this evening, Rich.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a delight.
That's been absolutely brilliant. And yeah, now normally Pitsy sends Nick a sign off, a little joke or a sign off to do, but we haven't got anything. So I just have to come up with something.
Yeah,
exactly. So I've just come up with something. So please remember, you've got to lock your team by Thursday evening. If you have any questions for then, just, you know, message me or Nick or Rich on Twitter. Or whatever. Nick's still using Twitter, so, you know, if you ask him a question, he'll still be there.
I wouldn't advise anyone to be asking me questions about fan team, because all I do is ask you questions. So if anyone asks me a question, I'll just be coming to you.
Yeah, I should have used your figures in my optimizer. That's the main lesson I've got from this. Your projections in my optimizer. Anyway. Great. Well, good luck for everybody. Week 6, and bear in mind there's buys this week as well, and then price rises after this week. So, yeah, good luck, everybody.